On the Vocalo hotline, we've got the soundtrack for your Friday nights. If you need to hear that one song you love or want a dedicated track to that special someone, I'm taking your calls and DMs. Tune in every Friday night at 8, both on WBEZ and Vocalo.org.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. At the end of this podcast, stick around for a rundown of the latest news here in the Chicago area. But first, a trip to the pharmacy is something that many of us take for granted. But for thousands of Chicagoans, getting a prescription filled can mean traveling miles outside of their neighborhood or going without medication altogether. As major pharmacy chains continue closing locations on the South and West sides, there are growing concerns about access to basic healthcare services. When Walgreens in Chatham announced that it's closing in June, community members rallied to protest, and so did city leaders. Here's 6th Ward Alderman William Hall.
This is an example of when corporations abandon, especially black and brown neighborhoods. We're not here to beg Walgreens to stay. We're saying that their decision is the wrong decision. And in my opinion, it should be considered a first degree corporate crime. Because the amount of people that will be hurt by this, the amount of elders that will not have access to healthcare is evil.
Now, Alderman Hall is proposing a new initiative to help support independent pharmacies and keep medicine within reach. At the table was Edwin Muldrow, a second generation pharmacist whose family business, Delcar Pharmacy, has been serving North Lawndale for more than 6 decades. And Alderman Hall joined us as well. Now, as we know, unfortunately, businesses shutter all the time. We just heard a bit of the alderman's passionate speech at the rally last month that Chatham Walgreens is set to close tomorrow. So I had to ask him why he's branded this closure as, quote, evil and a crime. Here's Alderman Hall.
Well, it is evil. My ward superintendent, Daryl Smith, his mother is in need of 70 pills, literally, and he has to go 4 neighborhoods over to get it. Now it's going to be the 5th neighborhood. And so I think that the access to basic medicine, whether it's chronic or just to get by, it's evil to cut that access. It's a strategic drought, medicine drought, starting in the 3rd ward, has now covered over 6 wards in the city of Chicago over a span of the last 2 years. And so I think that is evil to cut the access to those who've been faithful, loyal investors in Walgreens. There is no Walgreens without 43rd and Bowen. And so to exit without innovation, without any commitment to re-evolving and reimagining, the same way they did on 12th Street. Mm-hmm. 12th and Wabash, 12th and State Street is a hot zone for medical issues and mental health issues. They didn't leave there. They kept access to pharmaceutical needs for those on the white side of the city. And so it is a racial issue. It's an economic divide. I consider this a medicine apartheid. One side of the city had challenges. They figured it out. Our side of the city, they labeled us as criminals, and they said that we have to leave for our own safety. And so, again, this is a tale of two cities in which one has access to the quality of life, and then others are criminalized for the challenges of life.
Yeah, to your point, Walgreens cited cost and security as some of the reasons that it's closing. Now, there are a total of 1,200 Walgreens stores slated to close across the country. At the rally, you were calling for a redesigned pharmacy-only store, and you made some demands around investments into the community. Speak more to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Walgreens had a chance, and they chose not to. Again, on 12th and State Street, you come, you fulfill your prescription, you move on. We look at, and you will hear shortly from a pharmacist who, again, has gotten cut out. Walgreens has put a corner, has cornered the market. They have wholesale price. They make deal flow easy. And so when you look on King Drive, when you look on Cottage Grove, we come from a lineage of doctors, eye doctors and pharmacists. They're gone. The cost to fulfill those prescriptions, as told to me by Sherman, you hear shortly, it was pennies on the dollars for decades. And so what you did was no different than what Walmart did. They made the little guys smaller and they kicked them out the community. Now that the big guys are gone, there's nothing there. So the Office of Pharmacy Access solves that problem, I believe. And what it does is it makes access to quality supplements, vitamins, and then now let's negotiate. We got 2.3 million people in the city. Let's get back to the pharmacist who still has their license. Let's get back to the pharmacist who knows the community, and let's give them space. The Office of Pharmacy Access is simply that. Make space for the pharmacy to come back outside, serve the community that they live in.
Have you communicated your concerns directly to Walgreens?
Well, you know, there's no need to talk to the enemy. We don't negotiate with terrorists. It was a strategic attack on the wellness of African Americans, elders. No need to talk. They made the decision before they talked to me, so I don't need to talk to them later. We don't beg, we build.
What are you hearing from constituents?
Well, what I'm hearing from the constituents is keep going, Alderman. We have an idea here that I think that can change the city, change the country. If we simply figure out a way for the city to be the landlord, pay the bills, and then let the little guys not have to worry about the overhead that it costs to do business, and let's tax those that, you know, maybe drink from midnight to 6 a.m. to sustain this office, three-person office, we get the support from the Office of Public Health, which we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we can make pathway. All we need is to make space, and all we need is for pharmacists to get back to serving. That's what they went to pharmacy school, is to serve the common person. So they want me to do it. I want to be done. I want to get it done, and I think that we're going to see something different in Chicago.
Well, let's hear from you, Edwin. You are a second-generation pharmacist. Delcar has actually been in business for, what, more than 6 decades?
Correct.
How have you managed to survive when so many other independent pharmacies have closed?
So just to piggyback on what the alderman said. So in my ward, in the 24th ward, so we lost 3 Walgreens during the same time frame.
Wow.
And presently, I'm the only drugstore in the ward.
Mm.
So it's been a challenge, not just for the businesses, but it's just a challenge just for your patient customer base. You know, you have elderly patients that live on the block. You know, they depend on being able to walk or send their grandchildren to pick up their medicines.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, with all the closures, you know, people are forced to take several buses to get to where they need to go.
And were you prepared for that as the pharmacist, for the 3 others around you to close?
Yes and no. You know, I'm there every day. You know, I like to say we've been proven to be an essential service business as a pharmacy coming out of COVID. You know, I was open 7 days a week. But it's the challenge of being able to handle the demand of patients. You know, you have a certain level, a budget that you're used to dealing with your normal patient loads. But now when you get an influx, an unintended influx of people coming in, where does the capital come from to support the demand, the increase in labor that mm-hmm. you're going to need, the overhead? So it's been a challenge, but, you know, it's doable. But I'm just encouraged by hearing Alderman Hall taking the charge for this. You know, one thing I just wanted to highlight, in January 1st, you know, Governor Pritzker was key for us in pharmacy to start making us whole financially. So just hearing an alderman here in the city of Chicago to openly and actively speak on behalf of neighborhood community pharmacy is incredible because, you know, we're the first line of defense. You know, the pharmacists, we are the most trusted health professional. I'm still a Walgreens quote. We are the most trusted health professional. People come to us for quick advice, mm-hmm. quick information. And we take pride in that, being able to serve our people. But ultimately, we just want the respect and just want to be able to continue to provide care for our patients.
Yeah, and beyond medicine, so folks are clear, what other services are you providing at Delcar?
Well, what we are a neighborhood drugstore. So in addition to providing prescription services, medical supplies, you know, we have simple hardware, beauty supplies, groceries for the children. You know, that was one of the things that happened for us during COVID, which I'm proud of, is that all the other groceries around me, they had closed. So I started going into the food space. So, you know, I'm selling simple groceries. So now I'm looking to expand in my building to open up a new grocery store, or my Latin brothers and sisters call it a bodega. So, so you know, it's just being able to be a businessman, but able to adapt to the circumstances that we're dealing with.
Yeah. So, Alderman, let's go back to this proposal that you are creating here. It's called the Office of Pharmacy Access. Tell
Absolutely.
Us a bit more about what it would do. It's kind of a city-run pharmacy?
Well, essentially what the city would do is we would negotiate land agreements. We would not acquire land. We look at lease agreements. And what I mean by that is, let's go through the route of where Walgreens has abandoned, for example. what the city would do is, in most cases, by the way, they don't even own the land. And so what the city would do is we would enter into a lease agreement, look at the next 20 years. That's what we want to focus on, the next 20 years of life expectancy, increasing it, in which we enter into this landlord agreement. The mm-hmm. city pays the lease, meaning we pay the rent, we pay the taxes, and we pay the utilities. For someone like Mr. Smurro and Dalcar, they have free shelf space. Come in, sell the things that are essential to the wellness of people, approved by the Office of Pharmacy Access. So the Office of Pharmacy Access, we're looking at only a 3-person staff, executive director, someone on legal, and then someone on communication. Mm-hmm. And then we would get the support of the Office of Public Health. So if we need some extra staff, if necessary, we'll lean on them. But the Office of Public Pharmacy Access, 3-person, we enter into land agreements in areas that are strategically in a drought. You just heard one pharmacy for over 30,000 people,
right.
One per 30,000. That's unheard of. And so we would pay the bills. And then again, the goal is to negotiate now with the pharmaceutical companies
right.
to sell in the spaces where the Office of Pharmacy Access has access to people.
This reminds me of a similar plan that was floated by Mayor Johnson back in 2023, but it was for municipally owned grocery
yeah.
stores.
Yeah.
We know that that plan was abandoned. Do you think that yeah. there's enough appetite for a city-supported pharmacy co-op?
Well, there's enough need. There's enough people that are ill. There's enough people that are crippled. There's enough people that don't have the basic needs to survive. And so the need is there. And same way with a grocery store. There's no access to basic quality. We have one man to my left that has access to food, access to medicine, access to things that are essential. I walked into this pharmacy. It's innovative. And as you notice, you did not hear him say anything about crime. You didn't hear him say anything about that, because when the community wants it, it stays. Community wants to be able to walk down the street and fulfill grandma's prescription. Mm-hmm. I remember going to the store to do just that as a child.
Sure.
And so we need to get back to access, because when we had those checkpoints of accessibility, the neighborhoods were better. People were healthier. People were outside enjoying life because they had access to the things that made the quality of life increase. So that's all we want to do, is give back to the community what they invested for over 50, 60 years in these Walgreens, which was an access point to not only the chronic medicine, but as you just heard, there's other alternatives. 200 pharmacies, Sherman White, 92nd and Stony Island, he has topical medicine. He has vitamin supplements. There's more ways to live other than aspirin and ibuprofen. And so what we want to do is broaden the scope of approved. Let's be clear. Like, we're not making stuff in the kitchen. We're approved medicine that has been proven to increase the quality of life. We say we want a Chicago that's vibrant, safe, and affordable. Well, what good is a safe, affordable city if nobody's living here because we're dying early?
Yeah.
So that's what the goal is.
What do you make of this idea, Edwin?
Well,
a city-run pharmacy co-op.
So specifically what the alderman is talking about is going back to the roots of pharmacy.
Come
compounding
on.
Medication, basically taking the benefits of the earth, the soil, and giving people natural, holistic healing. I think this is an excellent idea, because one of the things that we lack as independent pharmacy and business owners is that big brother, big sister effect, which is what the city will give
That's
us
right.
when it comes down to negotiating with the insurance companies, with the wholesale companies,
right.
because it's still business. You know, there is a barrier of entry that you need to go into business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, you know, you have to prove out capital to go into the pharmacy space. Like, if you're in McDonald's, you want to open a McDonald's franchise, you know, I don't know what the number is, whether it's $1 million, $2 million, you have to have up front. Where there is that cost in pharmacy, but the cost goes with the pharmacy wholesale companies like Amerisource, Bergen, McKesson, or Cardinal. So they're going to make sure that you have the capital, and they're going to actually take you to the bank to make sure you prove that you have the capital
mm-hmm.
before they even do business with you. So it's not just like opening up a barbershop or a pool hall where you can just say, hey, I'm in pharmacy, I'm open.
Yeah.
You have to have that resource. So that's what the city provides for us, is a cooperative partnership.
What do you want policymakers to understand, mm-hmm. Edwin, about the work of pharmacists, especially when they're in underserved communities?
Well, I can talk about myself. You know, I work 60 to 70 hours a week. Mm-hmm. You know,
wow.
I was
wow.
raised in the business, you know, You dedicate your life to providing service and care for your patients. And all we want to do is just be treated fairly and respectfully in our business. And you brought up a point earlier. One of the reasons why I'm able to stay open is that my father had the foresight to buy our property. Now, if I was renting somewhere on Ashland or Stony Island or Michigan Avenue, paying $10,000, $15,000 a month in rent, we would have been out of business 20, 25 years ago. So, you know, having the city, I'm just going to keep repeating this, having the city and what the alderman is bringing forth is allows for other entrepreneurs and pharmacy to come and service our people. And, you know, whether it be the new students graduating pharmacy school, as well as a lot of my colleagues and peers in pharmacy that are presently working at Walgreens or at or a CVS or whatever, have aspirations to do more.
What I'm also hearing you say, too, is that city, because you brought up the city and the state support a few times, it sounds like it's giving you some kind of hope as all of these this closures happen.
Absolutely. You know, COVID was a make or break moment for a lot of us in the industry, and we were and we are an essential service business. You know, we were open 7 days a week. In addition to providing pharmacy service, I set up a tent out front and we were cooking like it was Maxwell Street in the old markets back in the day. Because we're in a desert. I hate that word desert. Mm-hmm. But in addition to providing pharmacy services, we were providing necessary meals. And so that's what led me to go in to open up a grocery and a bodega, because there's nothing around us. You know, there's that disinvestment and... You know, like I said, I have to give all credence and credit to my father that for him being able to purchase the building as we did decades ago, that allows me just to stay and just try to continue to provide pharmacy services for my patients.
Just a couple seconds, Alderman Hall. What is next for this proposal?
Well, I want to, first of all, continue to reach out to my colleagues. It's in committee right now.
Because you're still trying to get support.
Yeah, so it's in committee. Committee is purgatory. And so we're going to take it out of committee. I look forward to having a hearing.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to work with the Office of BACP. I'm the chair of revenue. And so one of the things we're going to look at is from 12 at midnight and 6 in the morning, it's a lot of drinking. And my grandmama used to tell me, ain't nothing open that late but White Castle and Legs. So we want to make sure that we are not allowing people to lose, again, life expectancy. But let's use revenue that is being wasted, and let's use that to invest. So we're going to look at every taxation option that makes sense, that's fair.
Yeah.
And then secondly, we're looking forward to getting the city behind it. So we're in committee. We're going to look at a taxation structure, and then we're going to introduce it for a vote.
And we'll keep an eye. That's Alderman William Hall of the 6th Ward on the city's south side, and Edwin Muldrow, who's a pharmacist and owner of Delcar Pharmacy in North Lawndale. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
WBEZ is supported by Shedd Aquarium, where animals, people, science, and conservation come together. Through community outreach, education, and research, Shedd protects the water that supports life in the Great Lakes region and beyond. More at sheddaquarium.org. Shedd Aquarium, for animals, for people, for communities, for love of waterkind.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now, a rundown of the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. We checked in with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane and Chicago Sun-Times journalists Matt Moore and Caitlin Washburn. A new challenger has entered the race for Chicago mayor. Claire brought us up to speed. Here she is.
This would be someone who was expected to run. Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza made it official this morning in a YouTube video post. She's also going to make a formal announcement for her mayoral bid a little bit later this morning, around 11 o'clock in Little Village, as we know where she was born.
Oh, wow. So she's got a strong electoral track record, right? Less so for the office of mayor.
Right. Mendoza was elected 6 times to the state legislature, twice as Chicago city clerk and 3 times as Illinois comptroller. She was on the mayoral ballot in 2019. She garnered 9% of the votes in the general election before, as we remember, Lori Lightfoot defeated Tony Preckwinkle in a runoff election. So, you know, her campaign is saying all the things that a campaign should say this morning.
Yeah. Did she say anything about why she wants to run again?
Nice little video with sort of the skyline in the background, lots of little village sort of B-roll. Yeah, she says she wants to make the city work better, help communities grow. As we know, she's been, you know, kind of critical of Mayor Brandon Johnson, calling him too progressive. Also very critical of his handling of public safety. She's calling herself a pro-police centrist. She said she just really wants communities, especially like those in Little Village, to feel safer and for small businesses to feel more stable.
Well, speaking of familiar names, NASCAR could possibly be coming back to Chicago. Caitlin, what are you hearing?
Vroom.
Yeah, that's right. So it's still a big maybe right now. The city has confirmed that they're working on another deal, but it's all potential is the word that everyone is saying.
I mean, I thought 3 years was enough, no?
You would think. Yeah, okay. There is a term in the contract. It was a 3-year contract, but they had the option to do 2 1-year extensions in 2026 and 2027. So that seems to be what they're taking advantage of. The big thing is that they're looking to move away from the July 4th weekend. They were pretty heavily criticized for that, especially because there's so much time that goes into setting up and taking down the course.
Right.
So they're looking at closer to Memorial Day weekend and the Sueños Music Festival, which is toward the end of May.
Okay. That weekend is also busy, right?
Exactly.
You remember, yeah. There were, what, 3 festivals
well,
that weekend?
So many things changed when this happened, right? The Taste, which was for many, many, many years around the July 4th,
that's
sort of
right.
altered to being around right. Labor Day instead, and now you have Sueños. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a big question of when will this work?
And Caitlin, didn't they lose a lot of money?
So that's a good question. I think they did, but I think that they do like the spectacle of it, yeah. I would say. I know that they're trying to compete for more fans. They're competing with F1, which does do a street circuit race.
Sure.
So, who's to say what's going to happen? I think some of the two big criticisms and the two big questions that are lingering are... that long setup and takedown time that just jams up traffic. That
sure.
again, and you know, people's big criticism is you're taking away Chicago's front porch for such a long period of time and during our critical summer months.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, what's their permit price going to be? That was another big criticism. They paid much less than other big events like Lollapalooza, which takes up much less time and space in the summer months. Mm.
And your favorite topic, the weather, right?
Yes.
We all remember
yeah.
when those torrential
yeah.
downpours.
Oh, as the person who was soaked out there. yeah.
You remember.
And it impacted, you know, there were significant delays. You know, it was a little bit more dangerous for a street race, given the tight corners and all that. So I think the timing,
ooh.
The weather, all of that.
I had forgotten about that, Claire.
And then they were competing with the sun. They ended up the first race ended like a few laps early because the sun was setting. So they were like,
that's
we just
right.
got to call it.
Matt, fill us in on a new transit law that's taking effect.
Yeah, I mean, let's keep talking about fast and furious vehicles, right? The CTA.
No, oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So basically, we've got this new transit law that took effect on Monday. So it's goodbye RTA, hello NITA.
I think NITA.
Right?
We can
NITA,
call it
right?
NITA.
NITA?
Yeah.
Yeah. In my mind, immediately goes to like Nita Baker. It's and then
NITA.
I guess it's
my grandma's name too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, great names. So it's the Northern Illinois Transit Authority. That act went into effect Monday. And basically, we're in a sort of transitional period of time for the area transit. So my colleague at the Sun-Times, David Struip, he's got this great breakdown at the top of the week. And basically, so the act, it replaces the Regional Transportation Authority that oversaw the CTA, Metra, and Pace buses. And now we've got, the Northern Illinois Transit Authority. And you'll see the name change like in September 1 when the new board takes place.
And this will sort of lead to some pretty cool changes, right? Like more frequent buses, for instance?
That's right, yeah.
That's the hope, at least.
You've got more frequent CTA buses. They're going to expand services to more than 24 routes with this new money. And then you're going to have more Metra trains. The Rock Island District, they've got over like 12 weekly trains. Metra's going to explore extending like the electric line further south. And then, more frequent pace buses
out
there in the suburbs.
Which all seems like a good thing. All seems also like a new era for public transit in Chicagoland, don't you think?
Certainly. I mean, that's why that massive investment was so exciting last year to see that come through. I don't think a lot of people thought that would happen.
Yeah,
so
it's like a buoy, really.
Yeah.
For a while, the outlook was pretty dire. You were seeing a lot of, there was this, I guess, a sentiment that the CTA and Pace Buses and Metra, they were kind of falling off. I think this is another shot.
Mm-hmm. So. There's also the losing the federal funds, the COVID era funds. So they were threatening like massive service cuts if that hole wasn't plugged.
And there was also a huge sort of driver and operator shortage as well, which the CTA, you know, in the past year or two has really ramped up, fast tracking a lot of people to be able to accommodate the need, the demand being back.
So a renewed energy here, I think, overall.
I'm still riding a bus.
Yeah, same.
Maybe I'll see you on it one day when I'm going down to the Obama Presidential Center. I'll wave.
That's right, because you're going to remind folks that I live near there.
That's exactly
and
correct.
And I stalk the building every single day.
On your nightly jogs, wink, wink.
Yes, yes. While you're in the hot seat, Claire, tell us about the Broadview 6 saga, because that continues. And top Illinois Democrats are now weighing in on the whole thing. What are they saying?
This would be U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth saying that they want Chicago's top federal prosecutor at this point to resign, calling for U.S. Attorney Andrew Boutros to step down, describing his tenure as, quote, riddled with chaos, deep internal dysfunction, and alleged misconduct. Their call comes amid these misconduct claims, as we've been reporting this week, surrounding how prosecutors in his office really handled the Broadview 6 case, as we talked about on your show yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the charges have been dropped at this point against the demonstrators and what they didn't during Operation Midway Blitz, or what they didn't do, really. But now several are speaking out just about how they were treated by the courts and decrying the actions of the prosecution. So people just really, I think they want a change up top.
Matt, we've got some news for folks over at Trump Tower. What's going on over there?
Yeah, so basically they got their first new retail renter since like 2009. I hadn't really realized it had been that long, but it's this 70,000 square feet of retail space. It's largely sat empty. And, you know, it's kind of one of the, I had been wondering why, and Black Club Chicago, they've got a solid story on about how brokers and real estate experts, they say that for a while the space has kind of been difficult to lease because if access to the retail part from the nearby street, it's kind of underneath there. And then you're also opening up a shop below a massive Trump sign. And in Chicago, that's kind of been...
folks might feel, you know, a little
it's
indifferent.
Tough town for Trump.
That's right. It's very much maligned. And
so you can see why it would go 17 years without any retail tenants or new retail tenants, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I'm really not sure if more will follow. I mean, so the Sun-Times Mariah Rush, in her story, she's got that basically LaGrange based Greek restaurant Prosino, they're opening up shop there.
Okay.
The owner there says, you know, it doesn't really bother him. Opening up underneath the Trump sign for him, it was like he likes it that based on energy, walkability, connection to the water. But yeah, you know, it seems like ever since the Sun-Times office was raised and the Trump Tower site, you know, kind of bloomed from there, it's been the site of protests. It's a lot of people, I think there's even some sort of new petition. They're trying to take down the sign. It feels like that.
Oh, wow.
A lot of efforts here and there, but, you know.
As Trump is putting his name on other buildings all over the country. So.
That's right.
And then getting them taken down subsequently.
That's right. That's right. Other stories you're watching out for, Claire.
Yeah, kind of on the real estate beat, this is a shuttered Rogers Park. It's an old fire station. An old firehouse is getting revitalized. Mm. It's an 111-year-old station, which has also been vacant, oddly enough, since 2009. But a development team that's local to Rogers Park says they want to spruce it up, restore it for community use, so not necessarily for retail. But they want to open a cafe or a bar, something similar to like a community hub, and then an event space, because lots of firehouses, as we know, have a second floor, and they also want to offer some co-working options.
Oh, interesting.
But we're seeing this, I think, in lots of neighborhoods, old firehouses, old churches, becoming something anew.
Yeah.
So we'll be waiting.
I know people who have gotten married at some, right?
Yeah, event spaces, even housing.
Yeah,
there's a lot you can do with old buildings with good bones.
Yeah, for sure. Caitlin, let's talk about old buildings. A judge ruled on a bitter fight between two owners of a hospital in Oak Park. What's going on there?
That's right. If you remember back in March, the majority owner of West Suburban Medical Center abruptly closed the hospital. And that's essentially triggered a legal battle with his business partner, who they together bought West Suburban and Weiss Memorial Hospital in Uptown, which also closed last summer. Mm-hmm. And they've taken each other to court. They're suing each other. And the minority business owner owns all of the property that the hospitals sit on. So he tried to evict Manoj Prasad is the majority owner, Resilience Healthcare is his company. He tried to evict him from the property. And Prasad filed suit back. And so then the minority owner, he asked a judge to appoint a receiver, which basically means have someone come in and take over control of this hospital. Mm-hmm. Basically just it's a move to get the hospital away from the other owner. And the judge ruled on Monday that he wouldn't do that. Basically it's for a lot of reasons, but it is an ongoing legal battle. But basically these allegations that he mismanaged money tied to the hospital, the judge found that there wasn't enough evidence to prove that. Oh. So, it was interesting to be in the courtroom. You know, a lot of employees have been sitting there every day, and one of them was a nurse who came out crying because they don't trust Prasad. They don't think that he's doing a good job. They don't think he should be running this hospital. They're skeptical of the other business owner too, because he, like, in the 11th hour has come in and said, like, oh, I'm going to take control of the hospital, even though he's never been a present. So
is there a plan at all to reopen?
So he says there is. In March, he was aiming for late June, early July. We'll see if that happens. The big issue was that the electronic medical record system, the EMR, had not been billing properly, is what he said. So they were losing money. So he had to close down.
I see.
He has said it was a temporary closure, and he's hoping that once he recoups that money, he's able to open the hospital back up. But he's going to have to rebuild trust with the community. There is a lot of mistrust with the community, especially
and
with his
staff.
Employees.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of them have left. They've been furloughed, and many have moved on.
So they're going to have to start all over.
Yep.
Literally.
That's right.
Matt, let's talk about Chicago Blues Fest because it kicks off tomorrow and there are top acts that folks should look out for. Give us a rundown.
Yeah, well, the top acts that I'm looking forward to is this big celebration of Alligator Records. This is this Chicago Blues label, and they're finally getting their flowers. They're celebrating this 55-year milestone.
Nice.
And, they operate out of this, like, really unassuming 3-flat in Edgewater across the street from Devon Market. If you know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Friday, Alligator Records is going to have their... in-house artists like Lil Ed Williams and the Blues Imperials, Ronnie Baker Brooks, Tronzo Cannon, Nick Moss, and Tinsley Ellis. And basically this was started, again, 55 years ago. WBEZ's Courtney Kippers has this great story on it. And, the founder, Bruce Iglauer, he's got this great quote in the story where he says, I really wanted to create a situation where I was exposing musicians that I like, take it upon himself to really try and give musicians their due. And he said, I never cared too much about making money, and I've succeeded in not making a lot of money, but I've had a wonderful time and I intend to have more of a wonderful time.
I bet. That's for sure. All right. So much news, folks. Let's leave it there for now. That's Matt Moore and Caitlin Washburn with the Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.